welcome to A Year on the Farm. I am your host, Kimberly Allen. Join me as I share my small farm journey on Vancouver Island and connect with other female farmers about how to grow beautiful food, manage a farm, and feed our communities. Hello, and welcome to A Year on the Farm. I am your host, Kimberly Allen. Today, I am bringing you an interview with flower farmer Thanu Egal from Wild Bee Florals. Since 2018, Thanu has grown flowers for market and floral subscriptions in Vancouver and North Vancouver. In 2020, she moved to the Comox Valley to pursue flower farming full-time and embrace rural life. Wild Bee Florals is how she connects science, art, and culture with regenerative farming principles, and she offers seasonal bouquets, arrangements, subscriptions, events, and workshops on her farm. I really enjoyed hearing how Thanu has developed community around her flower farm and her thoughts on the future of flower farming. Hello, Thanu, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I would like to start with a land acknowledgement. Thanu and I both live and farm on the Comox First Nation. And I'm so grateful for your time today. And when I reached out to you, you had such an enthusiastic response. And I really appreciate that because you are doing something that is so special. And I really love following your journey and story on social media with your flower farm. So I guess really what I'd love to hear first from you is what are some considerations for folks going into flower farming, especially on the type of scale that you're working on?
Mm-hmm. So I started off in urban spaces in Vancouver. So I was growing on maybe 1/10 of an acre. And it was just last year, 2021, that I transitioned to a full acre. So I think in terms of considerations, well, first of all, it's a very rewarding lifestyle, but it's not for the faint of heart. It comes with a lot of challenges. So, you know, a lot of people have an idea in their head what flower farming looks like, but it's just like a little bit of a forewarning. Like, it is very challenging from all different angles, from climate change to financials to land access. So it's like you have to be ready to take on challenges and also be flexible and be able to problem solve and just keep going. So you have to have that type of personality, I think, to get into something like this. I would say one of the first things to figure out is your financials and what your goals are if you are looking at flower farming to make money. Because you can always grow flowers and have a stable job and just do it on the side. But if you are really looking at flower farming from a business perspective, you have to figure out what your support systems are, because when you invest in your project, there's going to be lulls in the winter. So you just have to be prepared to move through that. And it's like, even though I'm working a lot on this project and have put a lot of effort into it, I still have a really good support system where my partner can sometimes help me on the weekends. And I hired some help. So just know what those parameters are going into it. I would also say do market research in the area, that you want to start the business, because you don't necessarily want to repeat the same thing, especially if someone already exists doing that, you know, offering the same revenue streams over the last 5 years and you just come in. Like, there will be overlap, but I think it's very much encouraged to figure out different niches that you can fill as well to be successful. And a common mistake amongst a lot of new farmers, especially in flower farming, is people are so grateful to be growing flowers anyways, that they tend to not value their time that's going into it. So like doing market research, you can also gauge what the prices are, like What are other flower farmers selling their bouquets for? What are florists selling their bouquets for? What type of skills do you have to offer so you can figure out where you fit in that range? So market research is really important. I would also say connecting with growers in your region to help answer your questions. And this doesn't mean just like, you know, you have a couple growers that you're constantly sending questions to on Instagram. I think there needs to be a bit of give and take there, because people's knowledge is time that they put into the practice. So, but at the end of the day, like having a network of growers to support you and being actively researching what it is that you want to grow is going to be really beneficial for you. I have personally I started off just going for it because I've always been growing in garden spaces. So the first 2 years, I just did it without too much mentorship. And then during the last couple of years, I took a couple courses. So I took the floret growing course, which you don't have to take, but I found it valuable for some of the information regarding succession planting as well. I'm taking a greenhouse growing course right now. So I think being aware of different courses that are out there that you can benefit from, so you're not, you know, making a lot of mistakes as you start, will be really good. And you're also paying someone for their knowledge. So if someone that you admire is offering a course and it's something that you want to do, it's you're investing in yourself in that process. What else? I would say it's really good to collaborate. Like I've collaborated with other florists, cake makers, photographers. So these collaborations are really good because it helps extend your network, and you also learn a lot of different things. Like you're able to learn from them and they're able to learn from you, and at the end of the day there's something that you guys have created together, which will be really nice. And the other last thing that I would say is just to keep moving forward. You're going to be making a lot of mistakes. Like it's just a given going into something like this. So to not be dwelling on the past and instead focusing on how to keep improving, I think will set you apart from other folks as well. So I think those are some considerations for someone wanting to take on a flower farming project.
That's pretty amazing. And you've touched on so many facets to really just small scale farming in general, in terms of community and resiliency, education, research, and also ensuring that we don't undervalue our labor and products. And that's something that's super important to me, and that I feel that the flower farming community in general, in terms of who I follow, are doing a wonderful job of promoting why purchasing local flowers is important, not just to support the people doing it, but on a bigger picture in terms of sustainability and the environmental impact of choosing flowers that are grown elsewhere, that are resource intense, perhaps not with adequately paid labor, and all of the environmental impact of importing flowers. And so that there's like that balance of the storytelling happening in the flower farming world right now, which I find is so beautiful, because it's not just that I see your flowers and think, oh gosh, that's gorgeous. but also like, wow, it's important that we buy these. It's the undoing of some of the harm that we have collectively caused, while also supporting somebody for like the beauty that they're bringing into the world. And so how did you decide on the revenue streams that you wanted to use? And maybe you can go into a bit more detail about what you do there.
Mm-hmm. So I've tested a lot of waters, but again, I'm going to bring back market research, because it really helped determine what was needed in the region that I'm growing flowers, you know. So if like, and it's also evolving. Like, it's not like I stuck to one type of revenue stream or three types every year. Like, I'm always evolving and seeing what is it that fits with my personality as well. So I would say that's a big factor, is to consider what your personality is. And so if you're more extroverted, it might be really nice to do farmers markets or community workshops. But if you're more introverted, maybe there's a way to sell wholesale, because you can always come outside of the, you know, you can challenge yourself to do something that you're not very comfortable with. But at the end of the day, that could also have a very, it could be very tough on you too. So just knowing what your personality can handle is like a really good approach to figuring out the revenue streams. And also figuring out what you want your work week to look like. Like, do you want weekends off? Which is tough in the farming world, but it, you can make it happen and have like a weekly focused business. So just knowing what those parameters are is really good. I think I'm still new, right? So I'm still doing a lot of trial and error, trying to figure out whether my time is worth it. And then also, my crop planning is related to how I do revenue, like determine the revenue streams as well. They're both kind of like, they play off of each other. So the way that I look at it is like, I have a week where during the growing season, I'll probably cut the fields twice a week. And so once they are cut, what are the different ways that I can sell those flowers? So for example, I'll probably be doing a mid-week cut. So like a, probably a Tuesday cut, where on Wednesdays I could do subscriptions. And then, you know, I could probably do a Friday cut. That means I can work at the farm, you know, I can offer the flowers for the farmers markets and events. So just figuring out what your week, what you want your week to look like, again, is like another big factor. And yeah, I would say taking good notes too. Like, if you really didn't like doing something one year, then you don't have to do it again. So just trusting yourself that you can make it work, and then also just sticking to it. So I don't know if that's the type of answer that you want, but that's sort of what, that's how I approach like revenue streams. I'm, as I start off, I'm like willing to test out different things. But at the end of the day, the advice that I have gotten from other growers as well is to then focus and not overextend yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a really important part, so that even just in terms of time management, being able to stay focused and not stretching yourself too thin, because it's a very intense season and physically demanding, emotionally demanding. And so to be able to balance that and make sure that we're not taking on more than we have the support system to handle. And something I really love, I follow a farmer back east, and she shared her, you know, 10 flowers she loved that she'll do again and 10 that she won't do again, and explained why. And so even just having a photo of every flower that she grew so that she could go back and categorize that and then share it, I thought was amazing. But then also just her explanation of why she doesn't want to grow some things again, I thought was so helpful and useful, because we can love something, we can want to grow something, and then realize, you know, it takes up too much space or whatever. That's my feeling on broccoli. So it's a complete, we do sprouting broccoli, but we won't do crown broccoli because it's an absolute waste of space. I don't think people realize when they buy a crown of broccoli, like the flower, how much land and water and pest reduction went into that. It's for me not worth it at all. We don't have a lot of space. So I like to be careful with my space. And I think that's also a consideration in terms of like, how much space do you have? What can you realistically grow on your land? And I know you are on, I think I would probably describe it as like a patchwork of land in the Comox Valley. Maybe you can describe your land a little bit for us.
Yeah. So the way that I grow is so my sites are divided between two properties on the same street. And one of the sites is where I have all my annual flowers. And then I also built a greenhouse. So greenhouse and a large section of the annual flowers are at site one. And then at site two, there, I would say the gardens are divided into three sections. So there is a dahlia patch, then there is a perennial garden, and then there's also like a spring bulb patch as well. So it's all dispersed. And it's really interesting to have it in different areas as well, because right now, some of my garden beds are completely covered in snow, and then other garden beds are all grass. So it just shows you can kind of take advantage of the different microclimates based on the gardens and where they're located, or it could come to hurt you as well. So you just have to gauge what the conditions are in those spaces.
That's amazing. And the photos from where you grow, it's so beautiful. I love seeing the shots of your greenhouse with all the seedlings in there. And it's pretty phenomenal. But that takes an incredible amount of planning. And that's what farmers are busy doing throughout the winter, planning, preparation, that sort of thing. And that's such an important part of the cycle. And then I also feel like you touched a little bit on it, but maybe you can share with us what have been some of the challenges with the new site that you're at.
Yeah. So I would say challenges in general is that a lot of young farmers can't access farmland. Like they can't afford it really. And so I'm a first generation farmer, which means that I have to learn everything myself and rely on other experts in the community that I would reach out to or connect with to, you know, be successful. So that's like a challenge that you don't even think of. But it is, like, I was listening to a podcast recently too about just farms that have a lot of generational wealth and knowledge are hands down more successful than a lot of small scale farms, which was very hard to listen to as well. But that's something that I have been holding on to and figuring out how to overcome those challenges. And I would say at our sites in particular, weed pressure has been so intense. So one of the sites, it used to be farmed organically and then no one farmed it for a number of years, which meant a lot of weed seeds came up and then it went right back into the ground. So last year, we attempted to direct sow some filler and foliage, and we just couldn't keep on top of weeding. So we ended up putting down landscape fabric. Like, we learned right away because it was one of our first tries to put up to direct sow some stuff. And since we saw that it was failing, we used landscape fabric with holes in them for the rest of the beds. And that was really good. But even then we found that, Canada thistle kept coming up. Like, it kept pushing. It was so intense. Like, it kept pushing our landscape fabric up. So we had to also weed it out two or three times. So we're just hoping over time, as we're constantly taking out weeds, the garden beds will be more manageable, because I would like to grow without fabric, but I don't know if that's a reality at our site. We're also hoping to do more no-till. So for example, at the site that I'm that I have my annual patch, Will and Victoria, who I lease the land from, they also have their garden spaces, and they've started to use cardboard mulching to suppress the weeds and do more perennials. So there's a lot of different approaches to handle the amount of weed pressure that can be at a site. And I would say we also kind of touched on this too, is having flower prices undercut. That's a big challenge too when you have a business, because, you know, you're putting out a price that you calculated it to be a good value. And even then, you know, you're probably you're offering it at a lower price than what you maybe should. And then knowing that there could be others who charge a lot less, and people are very price driven. So I think a lot of hobbyists. You know, it's great that you're putting out a lot of flowers and whatnot off the roadside, but people's associations with flower prices can then be hindered because of what they see. So if they are driving down a road and notice like a big flower bouquet for $5 or $10, then they're going to think twice before spending a seasonal, like $30 for a seasonal bouquet, which is like what it should be worth. So yeah, I would say those are the biggest challenges that I'm trying to overcome.
Well, that's amazing. And I think that, building a relationship with customers for us has been really helpful in helping to educate the value of our product. That when they get to know us and they get to know really what it takes for us to grow the food or the flowers, then they're more emotionally invested. And also, you know, they want to be supportive. And that has been, but that takes time for sure. And so I think that's even a factor when considering revenue streams. So, you know, if a person's going to use social media and a website to sell subscriptions, then use that platform to build a relationship, or attending farmers markets, then that's an opportunity to talk directly to people about what you do, where you do it, why, and what it takes to grow flowers. And I feel that because of Aaron at Floret and so many other people who've truly elevated flower farming, that we are getting there. Like, we're starting to acknowledge there's gardening and there's farming. And farmers are making a living. Like, it can be a portion of your income or all of your income. That's not for us to even know or judge. But a farmer is making a living from the work that they're doing. And it's important that we value their time and labor. And the reality is, as we head into another season, the cost of doing business for farmers, I'm not quite sure if the general public is aware of how hard it's going to be for people. So I'm already seeing, for example, farms that board horses who can't afford to continue doing it at current rates because of the rising cost of fuel and hay and all of that, you know, and like all of those aspects of what's happening in the agricultural world and supply chain and everything impacts small farmers no matter where we are. Mm-hmm. So that's a reality too. And so I want, you know, we're going to be doing a lot to let our customers know there's seed shortages, there's increased prices for seeds, there's, you know, like all these pieces add together to a farmer potentially needing to charge more. And so that's a big part of that education piece. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really evident through your social media and your beautiful website.
Thanks to Chewy Creative.
Yes, Chewy Creative did a beautiful job with your website. It's really lovely, and it absolutely tells a story, which is what I love about it. And you have fantastic photography on there. So you radiate what you love about what you do. And I'm a big believer that in any form of work, when people have that feeling about their work, it is infused in the product. I remember, like, we bought some flowers and some plants from you at the farmer's market, and just your enthusiasm talking about it, it was like, oh, this is fabulous. And the girls were so excited to plant their plants, and it was something different. And so thank you for that. Just so you know, it's very evident to all of us when we're interacting with you. And so I feel that you are very hopeful about farming. And so maybe you can share a little bit about how you see the future of flower farming.
Yeah, Well, I think small scale farming is very much needed to build resiliency in our agricultural system. So it's like, it's needed. So in terms of the future for it, I think people have to be a lot more collaborative and creative in their approach to making sure that this is a practice that continues to happen. And a podcast that I recently listened to, it talked about the concept of big team farming and it just being groups of experts in different fields coming together, like a marketing expert and a growing expert, and like ensuring what the different roles in your business are and being able to, you know, not be the ex, like not try to be the expert in every single part, and instead being able to pay someone to do it or bring someone into the business to do it is what I think successful small scale farming ventures will be like. So yeah, I think people are just going to have to work together to make it happen, because it's not like, I find it very challenging to think that the individualistic idea of I can do this all by myself and make it successful is going to be very difficult. So collaborative farming is, I think, the future.
I love that. That's amazing. And yeah, I agree with you. I feel like small scale farmers have the ability to be resilient and flexible, and we can pivot. And so I feel like in terms of like local food production and flower production and plant production, that we have an opportunity right now. But we also are so dependent on the community in engaging with us and being willing to learn and come along for that. And so, I mean, I'm pretty hopeful about small scale farming, and I actually really feel like it's the future of food. I think that, you know, that multi-generational large farm that we have traditionally known as farming in Canada is shifting. And that your idea of that collaboration is going to be even more important. And we see that happening. There's farming cooperatives and local groups to support farming activities or young agrarians, you know, trying to bring young folk and match them with land, that kind of thing is, for me, really like the direction that we're going to be going in. And it's pretty exciting. I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are just tired of a lifestyle that they don't even want to prescribe to. So this is I think making sure that local agricultural systems exist and like making sure that you are supporting it in some way, whether you're a part of it or buying from it, is a wonderful future for it, you know?
Absolutely. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. This has been so valuable, and it's amazing to hear about what you're doing. And I would love for us to sort of reconnect in a year as like, okay, so now what's going on? Tell us about how this year went for you, because it's, to me, really exciting when there's new farmers, because I think we have so much to learn from new farmers as much as from people who have years of experience, because there's like a different perspective there. So I'm really excited about your season. I think it's going to be a beautiful thing, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks for having me again. All right. Thanks. Good luck with your season too.
Thank you for listening to A Year on the Farm today. Don't forget, new episodes arrive every Tuesday anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You can also connect with our community on Instagram at A Year on the Farm, and visit our website at gatherfarmandkitchen.com to learn more about our farm and to sign up for our email newsletter. Please remember, beautiful food is in your future.